the intent here is to be broad, not to put in anything necessarily difficult, inquire requirements upon the department, but for you to adopt regulations that allow some form of comment from the public, either written, you could do public hearings if you thought it was necessary, if it was a significant change on a facility that had a large impact on a number of people, it, you know, it would be up to the department.
Could I ask a question? Mr. Murray, do you intend that this would apply only to subsection 3? Begins allowing.
Well, actually, Mr. Chairman, I think it would be better to apply only to subsection 3. I think as it's drafted here right now, it would apply to all three of those. And, you know, if they want to change the mailing address on the permit, I don't think we need to go through public comment period for that. But I would say under paragraph 3, yes, that's what I wanted to apply.
If I didn't hear incorrectly, though, under subsection paragraph 3, that is already a provision in federal regulations that it has to go to. Public hearing.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Post, that is correct. I think where the policy calls might well be, I would like to advocate that this amendment not be bound to subsection 1, but that for the committee to debate whether it should be addressed to subsection 2, and that's that would be policy call. Apply to 2. Well, it already applies to subsection 3. It's a matter of whether speak to subsection 2 also.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr.
Garland? We could have Mr. Chappell explain exactly what paragraph 2 is. Are we talking about a change in a permit, for instance, that would allow for additional emissions, for instance, or what kinds of situations are we talking about there in paragraph 2?
I apologize for the uncertainty of paragraph 2 because it is that way because of some things that are currently under litigation at the federal level. And the federal regulations describe a number of what are deemed as minor permit modifications, some of which can indeed allow increases in emissions. An example might be that you have a number of, say, a seafood processing plant that is expecting for this summer an increase in production because of a certain fish they want to process. And so they would supplement their existing plant by a new small boiler to cook the fish. But that the amount of emissions from that boiler would be relatively small, in the neighborhood of, say, maybe 10 tons per year of nitrogen oxides, and the rest of the plant emits 300 tons per year already. That would be the type of activity that could be approved under federal law as a minor permit change. So in essence, federal law describes this situation in the negative by saying a minor change is not a major change. A major change is something that's addressed in Title I, which is in many cases in the neighborhood of 40 tons of emissions for some pollutants or 25 for other pollutants. If you're modifying an existing facility, or if it's a brand new facility, you're talking about 100 tons per year, in some cases 250 tons a year. So I don't want to bog you down in the technical part here, but minor permit changes can mean things just in change in process from one line to another, one product to another, that wouldn't result in emission changes, or well may address minor changes in emissions, or ways of reporting emissions. Those are, it's a broad umbrella, some of which would, under federal law, not need a public process to accomplish those. And there is discretion under here for the department to describe how these minor changes would be executed through the regulatory agreement.
With Mr. Chappell's explanation, I would like to basically modify, make it so this amendment would apply to paragraph number 2, and it is not necessary then to do to number 3. There is a public review process.
If you did it to subsection 3, you would essentially be redundant.
Okay. Well,
why would we need it for subsection 2, which is for minor changes in permit terms and conditions?
As I understand the explanation, those situations that will fall within paragraph mm-hmm. number 2, some would require a public input process and some would not. Is that as this is written in federal law now stands?
Mr. Chairman, Representative of the Committee, Representative, most of In federal law, this whole concept of minor changes is built upon the premise of not having public review for certain minor changes. Mm-hmm. I want to caution the committee that that is one of the principal points of litigation in federal law. So it'll be years yet, at least one or more, before that's settled. But that was the contention, was that some of these changes should go through public review. And so this is, you know, but the current regulations say those changes that are described as minor changes don't need public review. This language is currently crafted so that, depending on how the litigation were to settle out, the department could be flexible enough and not have to come back to the Alaska legislature and ask for a change of statute. It's my understanding that what Representative Nordland is essentially proposing is saying to the department that we should provide some mechanism for public participation in activities that would be involved in number two. And it's also my understanding that that may not mean an official comment period or a public hearing, but might be other mechanisms.
Representative James?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I read number two and it says "and expedited," that means to me it does not include public review. There is no way you can expedite anything with public review, no matter how limited that you notice the public. So, you know, I would think that we should write our legislation so that it allows the most flexibility that is allowed, and if it then is determined by public by the federal law that some public review is necessary, then so be it. But in the meantime, I would leave it as it is, understanding that they're minor changes as opposed to significant changes, and I think that makes the big difference.
President Arnold?
Mr. Chairman, just to make one final comment, recognizing that these are minor changes that still could result in more emissions, I'm proposing here a relatively minor or a small mechanism for public review that's left up to the determination of the department as to, you know, how extensive it would be. I think we should provide that avenue for folks, given the fact that it's sort of unknown exactly all the situations under which this would apply.
Representative Davidson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we leave the discretion up to the commissioner, it seems to me that we want to do all we can in policy to encourage and provide for opportunity for public input. And so I would speak in favor of the amendment, at least to accommodate as much as we possibly can what we can do to encourage and protect public input opportunity.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If that's in fact the intent here, it seems like the word "shall" should be changed to "may." The department may adopt. Because if they shall, then I think we're back in this being hamstrung again for any minor type change.
Mr. Chairman, the "shall" applies to the fact that the department shall adopt the regulations in which the public may participate. So I think if you say "may adopt regulations," I'm not sure that would be strong enough. In other words, they would adopt the regulations, and in some situations they may decide the public may need not participate because the change to the permit is so minor.
Representative Ben.
Yeah, I was going to say I would suggest that the way it's drafted, maybe Margaret look at it. When you say the department shall, even though the may is future, and if you say they have to adopt regulations to implement the section, then include procedures under which the public may participate. I suggest that means you have to have some public participation. If you want a may, you should put may adopt regulations, not shall. I don't think the may after the public is permissive up to the department to decide whether or not they choose to have public participation.
May is for the public.
And I think if you want to put may at the front, then I think in section B they already have the ability to adopt regulations, which is why Tom Chappell had suggested, depending on litigation, they have the flexibility to otherwise deny the request consistent with this chapter and regulations adopted under this chapter, right? Okay.
I think, from my point of view, that I understand the intent of I think I understand the intent of the amendment, and I think I agree with Representative James that we may be adding more confusion than clarity. The middle section, or section number two, now is not specifically defined because there is ambiguity at the federal level. And I think trying to anticipate what the outcome of that would be begging every requirement to return. I would ask for any more comments on some. President Davis?
Well, I think the basic question, Mr. Chairman, is simply with or without the amendment, does it encourage or discourage more public input? And what I've heard here from the public interest groups and people who do not have primarily an economic interest in the regulation, it seems to me they favor more, in fact, public input opportunity. And that's why I speak in favor of the amendment.
Is there further discussion? Representative Maryland?
Chairman, I'd like to make an amendment to the amendment. That would be, on page 20, line 11, the after paragraph, semicolon, it would be the same language that you have, we have written here, except they would say the department may adopt regulations, and that section would be changed to paragraph in the last word.
Would you want paragraph in the first, replacing the first section? The first word?
First line?
The department may adopt regulations to implement this paragraph that include procedures in the first.
The subsection of the two is. It would read, the department may adopt regulations, then strike to implement this section that include procedures under which the public may participate when an amendment or modification is requested under this paragraph. Period. Okay. I'd move that as an amendment to the amendment.
We have before us an amendment to amendment number 7 as just as defined. Is there understanding of the amendment? So is there objection? Seeing none, we have before us amendment number 7 as amended. Is there objection to amendment number 7 as amended? Seeing none, that is passed. President Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One further amendment. This goes back to this 010 section.
We'll call this amendment number 8.
And I'd move for its adoption.
Jeff,
President Durham.
As you recall, under Section 010, the state basically is limited to the state may not adopt regulations more stringent than the federal requirements, except under certain situations. And those situations are listed on page 2, basically in subsection C. And there are the three paragraphs there that must be complied with, and those are the conditions under which more stringent regulations can be adopted. And if so, then it goes in front of a peer review panel and goes through that process. I take issue with the fact that each one of those paragraphs needs to be complied with strictly. And what my amendment does is it changes the language on line 26. That takes out demonstrate that and adds consider whether. In other words, the department must consider these things, but there doesn't have to be an absolute demonstration that each of these factors is are necessary in order to go into the peer review process.
Representative James?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, it's my understanding that the whole purpose here is that there must be. The department must determine there are some scientific findings that warrant going beyond the federal standards. and then identifying those scientific findings then is the point at which they get a peer review to see if their scientific findings are correct by other people who are experts in that field. And so just to consider whether makes it a much less consideration and doesn't indicate to me that they must have scientific findings. And I think that all of these things must be present before they can prove that they need to go beyond federal standards.
Mr. Chairman, again, we're talking about here an ability for the state to determine our own destiny, in a sense, to whether or not we want to have regulations that are stricter than the federal government. Usually we don't care how they do it outside, we want to do it the way we want to in our state. And this would allow, you're right, Representative James, it would be a little bit easier for the state to propose regulations that would be stricter than the federal standards. However, it still has to go in front of the peer review, it still has to stand up under that scrutiny. One of the issues here is in paragraph 3 that I have the most trouble with is the terms of economically feasible. It very well could be that a proposed change to a facility may not be economically feasible to that facility, but it still may be very necessary for the protection of the public health. And in my opinion, they're just going to have to factor that into the cost of doing business. And that one point there, economically feasible, could basically scuttle most of the improvements to air quality facilities that we might want to have in our state. So.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nordland, Representative Nordland, I'm glad that you recognize that factor.
I guess we're definitely talking about a policy call here. Is there further discussion? We have before us amendment number 8 with an objection. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Davidson?
Yes.
Representative Green?
No.
Representative Cott?
No.
Representative Logan?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
No.
Vice Chair James?
No.
Chairman Porter?
No. Representative, our amendment number 8, before we give these things status, has failed. Are there more amendments? No more amendments. There are those on the teleconference line that have asked if we're going to get to 93. It is my intent to try. We have before us, as amended, CS for HP 167. What is the wish of the board? I'm sorry. Yes. We had a request from Margo Knuth to explain to us the issue of criminal penalties. Please, Margo, do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, this is fine. This bill and mixed criminal penalties gives the Department of Law all the flexibility it needs to deal with criminal violations in this area. My concern was there had been a proposal that the criminal penalties from HB 39 might be brought over to this bill. And if that happened, there were some significant problems with the criminal penalties in HB 39. There was testimony earlier today that this bill seemed to that individual or that group to make it a misdemeanor offense to do that which would otherwise be a felony under the law. And just to clarify for the record, I don't read it that way at all. What this bill is saying is that it is a misdemeanor to violate certain parts of the title, but that's not taking away from my flexibility to prosecute as a felony any conduct that falls within assault or one of the serious crimes that we have. So with that, I have nothing to say. Thank you.
Thank you. There was testimony the last hearing that we would not be able to prosecute an intentional death of another as a felony, and I certainly would agree that murder is murder no matter how it's accomplished, if the intent and the result are there. That provision is still available. What is the wish of the committee? Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 167 out of committee with individual recommendation to the committee substitute.
As amended.
Object. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Green?
Yes.
Representative Cox?
Yes.
Representative Norton?
No.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Davidson?
No.
Vice Chair Jane?
Yes.
Chairman Porter?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, did that include the attached fiscal note?
Yes, whatever.
Good.
Motion includes the fiscal notes and HB 160S for HB 167, date 4293, as amended at the table. Is passed by committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, it's been a pleasure doing this.
We also have a committee hearing at 3 o'clock, but I would, if we could, real quickly, we've got, a real straightforward bill in 93. It's just enabling, and I'm hopeful it will take in the area of 5 minutes.
I guess it's serious, Bob.
Well, it looks like it's going to be longer. We're going to set it aside, but I would like to try. With that in mind, is Larry Lavola? Yes, Mr. Lavola, please come forward and tell us about 93.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm Larry Lavola from Representative Foster's office, and Representative Sims says, thanks for scheduling the bill. Unfortunately, he can't be here this afternoon. He is in committee at this time. This is a very simple bill by comparison. It establishes the VPSOs in statute. The Village Public Safety Officer Program has been in operation since 1980. It is in operation of our villages. It's been contracted through the nonprofit organizations, but it has not had any legal standing in statute, and this would provide that legal standing in statute. The sponsor statement, I think, covers pretty adequately the rationale for this, and I believe probably we have a sponsor statement from the department which supports this. There is a zero fiscal note involved because it does not include any increased cost. The one concern that came up in the CRA committee was, would this increase the state's exposure because it was established in statute? And the feeling was that this would in fact decrease the state's exposure because it gives the department the right to establish standards and to set up regulations and requirements for the VPSO program. And unless there are specific questions, with that, I would stop my statement. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Seeing none, we have two or three people on teleconference. Is there anyone else here that wishes to testify? Seeing none, we'll go to Anchorage and see how patient Sherilyn Krause has been. I'm sorry, she is there to observe Captain Tom Stearns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Tom Stearns, a captain with the Division of Alaska State Troopers. And part of my duties are the supervision of the VPSO program. In a short statement, I concur with what we've already heard in testimony. It's an extremely critical program for rural villages. I think by this statute being passed, that the ability to push the program into the future, give it some stabilization and some more direction, will be the benefits from it, along with a number of other things. I'm certainly available for any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Captain. Are there any questions? I see none. I would like to go to Kodiak and see if Ms. Margie Daroff is still here.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm still here.
Please give us your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and other committee members. Good afternoon, Captain Stearns. I'm with the Kodiak Area Native Association VPSO Program Manager Coordinator for the Kodiak Area Native Association, and I work very closely with the officers and the local Department of Public Safety troopers in implementing and following through on this program. And I believe that the placement of this program by statute will assist the villages directly in furtherance of providing public safety to them. It has shown to be a very positive position in the communities in public safety, which involves, you know, search and rescue, fire suppression and prevention, and also just basic walk the streets, you know, type of thing. All the communities so far have informed me that they do enjoy this program and they want to see it continued on, and please vote in favor of this bill. And if you have any questions, please feel free to call on me and I'll sit here.
Thank you very much. Margie, are there any questions right now? I see none. If we could, I think for the last person indicating a desire to testify, Chuck Gradigan in Dillingham. Is Dillingham online?
Yes, this is Chuck Gradigan in Dillingham. I just wanted to read to you a VPSO program manager's resolution dated 24th day of March 1993, kind of going over the position of the rest of the program managers about this this bill. At a meeting of the BPSO program managers regarding the future of the Village Public Safety Officer program, the managers representing 124 communities felt compelled to submit to the Alaska Legislature the following statement. Whereas the Village Public Safety Officer program over the past 12 years has shown itself to be a needed and effective program for providing basic public safety services such as law enforcement, emergency medical services, search and rescue, and fire prevention and suppression in rural Alaska. And whereas this provides a safe environment that enhances the quality of life, is conducive to economic development, and through prevention and early intervention, saves costs associated with public safety. And whereas up to 55% of the rural population utilized the services of BPSO during the past year, and whereas the only authority for the BPSO program currently resides only as a line item in the budget of the Department of Public Safety and is at risk without statutory protection. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the BPSO program managers representing 124 rural communities urge the Alaska State Legislature to adopt Senate Bill Number 15 and House Bill 93 to place authority for the BPSO program into the Alaska statutes. That was signed by the other nine BPSO managers, and Margie Daranoff, who you just heard from, would be the 10th. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Green.
I'm not just sure who I should ask this to, but I'm wondering, under the present situation, the BPSOs are funded by regional grants, and that will continue, I mean, by grants that will continue under this plan.
That, this Chairman Porter, that certainly is my understanding. If there's any difference of opinion, please holler out.
What I'm wondering about is, why is it necessary then to change that system if it's been successful for 12 years? And the concern I'm specifically concerned about is that if they are created within the Department of Public Safety, and albeit this time they're funded by grants, will there be a possibility down the road that they then would become actually state employees if they're trained and within the department? And then I'm considering, will that the various benefit programs and so on be involved, because we have a zero fiscal vote.
Mike, could you respond to that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, if you look at Section B of the proposed statute, it specifically provides that the commissioner shall provide grants to nonprofit regional corporations for village public safety officers. So it, in the statute itself, provides that it stays in this context.
If I may, sir.
Representative Green.
I understand that under this piece of legislation, my concern is, though, once this is passed, if then in a year or two, that having been a part of the department, somebody comes along and says, well, for heaven's sakes, we might as well make them employees. And I know you can't anticipate, but I'm just wondering, why is there a need to do this if that's not the intent?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, the intent is to recognize, there's a feeling that as long as this is a quasi a law enforcement public safety, that you really do not have any statutory protection, is my understanding of this. By placing it in law, by giving the commissioner the latitude to establish regulations, to establish requirements, to establish training that the person must meet, it is in the interest of protecting the state. The point you make is certainly valid. We've seen many things come through where one quick change of the law has changed the intent quite radically. And that I can't answer because I don't know how to anticipate it.
I see. Just one final question.
Yes.
Because I'd like to. There isn't any problem then if one of these BPSOs gets hurt, having then been taken into the Department of Public Safety as far as liability from the state?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, they still would be an employee of the regional corporation as the structure now stands.
Representative Cotton, then Representative Green.
Again?
No, I
can't give more. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Larry,
James.
Clarify, from my perspective, I understand this program to operate from a contractual perspective, but I think even in the budget we passed yesterday, there's a line item that is contractually in the budget that facilitates this cooperation between the Department of Public Safety and the native corporations. Is that not true, and that would therefore relinquish us of any responsibility to a state employee per se?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cott, as I see the bill, it in fact would not change that particular relationship in terms of what I see and what I understand the bill does.
Representative James.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see this as a needed bill for the very fact that if it is not in the statute, that we could line item that grant funds out and it's gone. And I think there's more protection by having this in statute and says that that there will be tax for that purpose. The other comment that I would like to make is, we know how things are today. We don't know how they're going to be tomorrow or 5 years from now. And I like Representative Green may be concerned that this is just a forerunner of making these village public safety officers a state employee. I have no problem with that when the time seems to be proper for that to happen. And it may sometime in the future as the villages are more more developed and different things are happening there. So I'm not a fear of that at all. And I support getting this statutory, I guess the word is, authorization for the village public safety officers and give them some security for their position.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think House Bill 93 simply lends more legitimacy to the VPSO program. And I guess you have to be from rural Alaska to really appreciate the vast spectrum of tasks that these people perform. And of course, after all, this is simply the effort to extend basic constitutional protections of life and public safety to people in rural Alaska. So while I certainly can't appreciate someone from our urban areas thinking that maybe we shouldn't take on responsibility for more state employees, I would add that if you're out in a village of 400 to 500 or 600 people and there's gun shooting, I thought we left the Wild West behind. And I think that this bill is a very important bill. I would urge support by the committee of it and get on with the job of offering equal legal protections to both rural and urban Alaska.
Representative Merrill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am also strongly supportive of the VPSO program as well as this bill. I would point out, however, that this is not going to be the ultimate protection for the program. The legislature still has the supreme authority in appropriating money, and we can ask the commissioner to make grants, but if the legislature doesn't appropriate the money, those grants won't happen. So, but I still think that it does give the program more legitimacy, and I think it's an important step forward. Thanks.
Representative Cobb.
I just want to make one final comment regarding this bill, and certainly I understand the importance of this program out in rural Alaska, at least I think I do. My only concern is that we have a basic governmental service that is being channeled through a corporation whose perhaps basic function is to serve its shareholders, and perhaps not the public interest.
Thank you. Let me, if I may, I have, I spent quite a few years on the Alaska Police Standards Council, and one of the issues in terms of recognition that there is a village public safety officer program that constantly came up there was, should we or should we not write regulations for these positions in terms of minimum standards for hire and for training? We actually wrote regulations and then subsequently found out that we had no authority to do so. The regulations, though, have been in effect, put into effect by being added as an adjunct to the contracts written with the individual corporations when these grants are awarded. That and the fact that they periodically, that a VPSO periodically finds himself in court as a law enforcement officer, and any defense attorney worth his salt would bring up, well, what in the world authorizes this designation in the first place, always comes up. So for those two reasons, I agree, one, this is a needed bill, two, it does nothing to change the current relationship in terms of adding responsibility, state employees, or liability to the state. And we could fight that battle with phase two if it ever comes.
Mr. Chairman, and to your last comment, I must add, that even if it does, so what?
Yeah. Well, there is another side of the story.
Yeah.
We do not have to argue it. That's the point.
Not if you're in need of the service and you're fearful for your life in many instances.
I agree with that.
Understand that.
With that in mind, what we have in front of us, I believe that we would like to have in front of us is the CS that was came out of Community Regional Affairs. I would entertain a motion to adopt the CS, Representative Chambers.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would like to move CS, our House Bill 93. Which is got a J with the number up above, and ask for unanimous consent to pass it out of the House with individual, I mean, out of the committee with individual recommendations.
Specify which version you recommend that.
Okay. So we are, we have a motion that we would be adopting CS4 HB 93. With a J on the identifying number, and move it from this committee with individual recommendations and
zero
fiscal note. Is there objection? I think I just combined everything in one motion there, but what the heck we just did. Okay, 93 is moved. I appreciate the patience of many members going over 20 minutes, because many of us have to go to another committee meeting that started at 3. Obviously, we will not get to the next two bills, 119 and 188, we will endeavor to fit them into the schedule in the days to come. With that, we are adjourned.
Yeah, Representative Foster, thank you.